Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Okay, well, I think I must start this week's podcast with last week's Federal Open Market Committee meeting and press conference. Inflation is causing the lower two quintiles of Americans to resort to credit and theft to stay alive, to consume food. But the Fed, regardless of that fact, is about to declare victory over inflation. I mean, that's what we got from Powell's press conference. Home prices are already out of reach for first-time homebuyers, and really for most of Americans. Inflation is still far above the Fed's asinine 2% target, as I am fond of saying. I mean, why have a target of inflation other than zero? If you're going to have a target, make it, you know, stable prices, not two, and then miss it by a lot and say, oh, we're done. We did our job. I mean, what we really need is deflation, not 3% inflation on top of an already unaffordable level. Not for me. I'm speaking for lower and middle class Americans. You know, the people who actually go to work every day and make this country run. Commodities are soaring. And even the Fed itself raised its own GDP growth and inflation forecasts from their December summary of economic projections to their March SEP. Their GDP estimate was raised to 2.1% from 1.4%. So they think growth's going to be a lot stronger. And the Fed's core PCE inflation guesstimate, its own preferred metric to use when choosing to how they want to lie about how fast prices are rising, increased to 2.6% from 2.4%. Financial conditions are easing and credit spreads are razor thin. And yet, despite all of these facts, the FOMC's median dot plot still implies three rate cuts for this year. No change. Still going to cut rates three times this year. Why? Why would they do that? The answer is clear. And it certainly is not Mr. Powell's temerity to attempt to portray to the public that his role as chief counterfeiter is to provide stability for the poor and middle class. The truth is, rather, that the U.S. government simply cannot afford to pay 5% interest on its nearly $35 trillion in outstanding debt. Just can't afford it. And Powell has to cut rates. So they're not paying five. Maybe they're paying closer to two or three. Look at Japan. Japan has, you know, a quadrillion yen in debt. And if the Bank of Japan didn't buy everything that was sold from the government, they'd be an insolvent nation. Already is. I guess it would be a bankrupt nation. And also the banking system, which is the entity the Fed is really in, you know, in place to protect and serve. There is a primary concern. That's the primary and absolute concern of the Fed, the banking system. That would be insolvent if borrowing costs remain anywhere near 5% for very much longer. This is because banks' assets, which include mortgage-backed securities, commercial mortgage-backed securities, collateralized loan obligations, credit cards, auto loans, corporate debt, government debt, and private credit loans will collapse under a regime that is far away from ZIRP, zero interest rate policies. The Fed must get rates down quickly before the multi-trillion dollar refinancing wall that is occurring right now through the end of 2025 causes mass corporate bankruptcies. This is why Powell can only pretend at best, and does a bad job of it, to care about the middle class. He must ignore the fact that food prices have soared by 25% since COVID, and that's the way they count it, much higher in reality. And they continue to rise from that unaffordable level. Inflation is turning more and more Americans to buy now, pay later options to eat. Last year, 15 million consumers reported using buy now, pay later installment loans to pay for groceries, according to research from Payments Intelligence. At least 3/4 of those earning less than $50,000 a year, 75%. And roughly 2/3 of middle-class earners, that those are the ones that make between 50 and 100, are living paycheck to paycheck in January. And over a third, 36%, making more than $200,000 a year, which used to be a lot of money. I don't think it is anymore. But over a third, 36%, say they are struggling to make ends meet between paychecks, living paycheck to paycheck. Nevertheless, Powell is preparing to cut borrowing costs and send prices of everything from real estate to food further out of reach. Wall Street wins and Main Street loses every time. When the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, U.S. households, in aggregate, usually get a boost to interest income that outweighs the extra cost of servicing debt. But not this time around. According to Bloomberg, the annual interest bill that Americans pay on mortgages, credit cards, and other debt has climbed by almost $420 billion since the Fed started tightening monetary policy in March of 2022. The rise in interest income over the same period was only $280 billion. So unlike every other Fed hiking cycle of the past half century, the latest one triggered a sharp decline in household net interest income. The reason? Interest costs rose faster this time because Americans now have a larger share of their debts in variable rate loans. Consumer credit, which is quicker to reprice than mortgages, saddles borrowers with bigger bills when rates go up. Of course, this is aggregate data. The disparity is greatest among the poor. People who earn more when rates go up are generally not the same people who face bigger bills when rates increase. Ownership of interest-earning assets skews towards the wealthiest, while Americans with the most expensive kinds of debt are more likely to be lower-income earners. Now, in a rare moment of sanity, even CNBC ran a story about how fragile the banking system has become. After 11 rate hikes through July of last year, the Federal Reserve has yet to start cutting its benchmark, but they're preparing to. But as a result, hundreds of billions of dollars of unrealized losses on low interest bonds and loans remain buried on banks' balance sheets. That, combined with the potential loss on commercial real estate, leaves swaths of the industry vulnerable. Of about 4,000 US banks analyzed by consulting firm Claros, 282 institutions have both high levels of commercial real estate exposure and large unrealized losses from the rate surge. The number of banks that are in trouble due to a lack of cash or assets that can be sold quickly are rising. According to credit rating agency Fitch, last year there were 67 lenders that had low levels of liquidity. That number is up from just 9 institutions back in 2021. So it's getting a lot worse. They range in size from $90 billion in assets to under $1 billion. And regulators have added more companies to their problem bank list of companies with the worst financial or operational ratings in the past year. There are 52 lenders with a combined $66.3 billion in assets on that list, 13 more than a year earlier, according to the FDIC. Meanwhile, the junk bond market is flashing a warning sign, further supporting the view that the Fed's higher for longer stance cannot last much longer. Junk-rated U.S. companies have seen their debt service costs spike, while profits have lagged far behind. This has put a squeeze on margins and put these businesses on a course towards insolvency, especially if rates remain elevated much longer. The ratio between companies' earnings and their interest expense has fallen to the lowest level since the pandemic. In other words, their debt service coverage ratio is tumbling. This ratio averaged 3.5 times for the median company in the leveraged loan universe at the end of September, according to Torsten Slok, chief economist at Apollo, down from 5 times a year earlier. Now, a coverage ratio below 2 often leads to a company being no longer able to successfully roll over its debt and tap the corporate bond market, or the even loans from banks. Just not enough coverage, not enough earnings. Now, the ugly sister to junk debt is leveraged loans. And they're loans, you know, bank loans to companies that cannot access the corporate bond market. The default rate on leveraged loans has climbed to 6.2% as of last month, coming closer to the peak rate of 7.7% during 2 of the last 3 recessions, according to Bloomberg and TD Securities. And now, the value of holding these bonds is starting to falter. On the day after this past Fed meeting, the average leveraged loan price had its biggest decline in 5 months. Banks are now performing a high wire act without a net. The Fed's bank term funding program, which bailed out the banking system last March, expired 2 weeks ago. This is why Powell's higher for longer stance is becoming untenable. Rate hikes work with a lag, and the lag has arrived. A year after the Fed funds rate hit 5.25% back in 2006, leading up to the global financial crisis, the market topped out and the real estate market began to crumble. 1 year after the Fed hit 5.25%. July of 2024 will mark the 1 year anniversary of the Fed hitting that range of 5.25% to 5.5%. It will also tick the 1 year mark of having real borrowing costs strongly in positive territory, which has historically caused the stock market and economy to roll over. Coincidentally, July will also be the time when the reverse repo facility runs out of cash, maybe even a little bit before then, which has been the source of liquidity for the market and has completely offset any quantitative tightening that has been attempted by the Fed. Are you prepared for the next phase of the bear market? We here at Pento Portfolio Strategies are. I mean, I know the stock market is never going to go down again. Don't you know it has momentum on its side? And the economy is never going to have a recession. It's doing fine. Things are great. Consumers in great shape. I look at the facts, and I use my model. My model tells me we're headed for disaster, but the model says right now, we are. We're going to ride the bubble higher, along with the rest of the buy and hold permabulls. The difference being, we have the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model, which gives us notice when it's time to sprint for the nearest emergency exit. Whereas most investors can only hope that this time is going to be different.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.